Hello and welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the lenticular Luke Cutforth.
I don't know what that means.
This week we're talking about challenging scandals and NASA's neglect, but first, we have a wee YouTube comment.
Who's it from?
That would be doxing, but I'll tell you what it says. It says, I would wear SciGuys gave me autism merch.
God, this is your idea that you were telling me about the other day.
It wasn't my idea that I was telling you about. I was telling you about these comments.
It's about somebody else's idea, which you were pitching as a genuine thing you think we should do.
Why should we? Okay, right. Comment below if you would like a SciGuys gave me autism a t-shirt, or a SciGuys gave me ADHD, or SciGuys made me gay. We'll make it a whole, all of the ones that most of our audience are. Let us know in the comments below. Prove Luke wrong. And more proving Luke wrong, we'll ask a question. And to answer this question, you must first fly to space and do skywriting in space. I don't know if that would work, but if it doesn't, fly to Saturn and change its rings to answer The question is, Luke, what is your favorite planet?
Pluto.
Wrong. Not a planet. My favorite is Saturn, which is the correct answer. So we're talking about the Challenger space shuttle today. Luke, you clearly know more about this than I do, given that off pod you found out that we were doing this and gave away the entire ending.
I found this thing really fascinating and I did a fair bit of reading into it. But I can't, to save you worrying, I can't remember any of it other than the final punchline. Which I gave away during the pre-show chat.
Punchline?
Well, you know what I mean. Like, how it all happened. Why it all happened.
Punchline is pretty specifically about jokes. You want to walk that one back?
Okay. The final, like, twist. The big old twist. The whodunit. The whodunit of this murder mystery. I gave that away.
But the smoking gun.
I'll leave it to you. You can do it. It's yours to do.
The smoking gun.
The smoking...
I'm bleeping that or making it silent. I don't care. You are on the naughty step, mister. So, the Challenger space shuttle, January 28th, 1986, is when this story kind of takes place, shall we say. So, NASA was very ambitious back then. So, they wanted to do, I think, 15 missions that year. I mean, when they had launched the space shuttles, when I say launched the space shuttles, I don't mean launched into space. I mean announced and said, here are things that we are doing. When they kind of brought the space shuttles to the public, they said, these can do up to, we can do up to 50 launches a year. They're reusable. They fly into the air like rockets and land like planes. Very cool. And the public was like, yeah, that's cool. Now we're getting bored of space, actually. You can make it as diverse as you want. Oh, Sally Ride and black people and people of other races and whatnot. But that's boring to us, the American people of the 80s. And NASA, of course, had to bend to the will of popularity, I guess. And that's kind of where our story starts. So they had a bunch of missions. So the first mission was delayed from the previous year. It was supposed to launch in December of 1985 and ended up flying in January from the 12th to the 18th in 1986. They had a whole bunch of other missions planned that year. 1986 was going to be a big year for NASA, and in a way, it was. Not positively.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, you don't think, 1986 NASA, what happened? Oh, they had an astronomy mission to study Halley's Comet and the launch of the Hubble Space Telescope. Is it Halley's?
Halley's.
Yeah. I knew it as I said it. Halley's Comet.
It's okay. You've got a lot to do.
What do you think of 1986 and NASA? You don't think of, oh, they had an astronomy mission to study Halley's Comet. And oh, remember the launch of the Hubble Space Telescope? You don't think of that, do you?
No,
you do not. The 28th of January really marred that year for them. And so that first mission flew. It was all fine. And then about 2 weeks later, things started to not go so well for them. So there was a six-day mission planned using the Challenger. And the Challenger had flown, I believe, 9 times before. So this was to be its 10th mission. There were 7 members of the crew, one of whom was what?
A teacher.
Yeah, look, absolutely. A teacher they had on board. And we'll get into why that was later. It was ratings, by the way. They were losing ratings. But we'll dive into that in a little bit. And so the idea was that during the 6-day mission, they were supposed to deploy a satellite, and also the teacher would do sort of lessons from space. So some kids would have, you know, a teacher teach them from space for the first time ever. You know, real important stuff. Mm-hmm. How does space affect education? Anyway, January 28th, 1986, 73 seconds after liftoff, the Challenger space shuttle exploded and all 7 people aboard died. And no one could have seen it coming, except for the engineers who did see it coming and tried their best to stop it.
Oh my God, I forgot that.
Yeah. So a quote for you. NASA ruled the launch. They had their mindset on going up and proving to the world they were right and they knew what they were doing. But they didn't. Yeah, this isn't a story of an accident. As it says on the NASA website. So if you go to nasa.gov/Challenger, STS, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, their website to tell you about the Challenger explosion. It's called the Challenger accident.
Oh.
There was no accident.
Yeah.
No, there was neglect. There was carelessness.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't on purpose, but yeah. Mm. On the scale of accident to like totally on purpose, deliberate, this is exactly what we want to happen. It's not at the complete accident end.
How about this? We can go through the story, then you can decide whether or not it was okay. An accident at the end.
Cool. I'll give it a ranking. A ranking out of 5. How accidental I think it was.
Buddy. Okay. So, yeah. I mean, the engineers tried their best to stop it. Bob Ebeling told his wife that night, the night before the launch, that the Challenger would blow up.
Whoa.
He saw it coming. And as well, I won't really get too deep into this, but these sort of engineers that knew, they were contacted by NPR and they had the story out really quickly, you know, of what happened. They stayed anonymous for so long. And it wasn't until, God, maybe 2006-ish, not too long ago, you know, 15, 20 years ago, however long ago 2006 was, that, you know, finally we found out who the engineers that sort of were involved in this were, because they tried their hardest, and specifically, you know, they felt quite responsible. There was like, you know, 7 people died on sort of national TV, and if you could do something to stop it and it didn't work out, you're going to carry that with you. You know, specifically, I think it was Bob Ebeling that really carried that with him for like a lot of his life, until I think later on when apologies were made and things came into light. And I think he managed to die with some peace as a very old man. Anyway, so they worked for Morton Thiokol, which is now ATK Thiokol. That was a Utah-based NASA contractor. So they made basically rocket stuff. No, I'm not even joking. Like solid rocket motors. Essentially, do you know how a space shuttle works?
In broad sense, yes.
So you take your space shuttle, you put it on rockets.
Yeah.
The rockets throw hot stuff out the bottom.
Yep.
That it's rocket science. It's relatively simple.
Yeah.
It's not rocket engineering.
Yeah.
Which is difficult.
Yeah.
The rocket science, actually very easy. Throw stuff out bottom and thing go up.
Yeah.
Very straightforward, right? Well, very upwards. Not the point. So these rockets are, the kind of shuttles attached to the rockets. There's different types of rockets, different types of fuel. And the idea is essentially to get it up out of orbit.
Yeah.
Or not necessarily even out of orbit, but just like, you know, into orbit, rather.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting to mention here as well, like, when we were talking earlier about how the shuttle was reusable,
Yeah.
When you think of a spaceship, the shuttle is, you barely even see the shuttle.
It's a little bit, yeah.
It's the little, tiny little bit. It's like the size of a small plane. The bit that's not reusable is like the thing you think of when you think of a rocket.
Yeah, the massive rocket.
Like the massive rocket. The big orange bits on the side.
Yeah.
Not reusable. Now reusable in some cases with modern technology. Mm. But back then, that was the bit that got thrown away.
Yeah.
Most of it still thrown away.
Yeah. Yeah. It fires you up and then you detach it and then you just got a shuttle floating about.
Yeah.
Very good.
Big car. Big car with wings.
A plane, even.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. If we want to get technical, Corey.
So, yeah. No. The if we're talking about space shuttles, actually, yeah. So the last space shuttle flight was in 2011. And as I said, they were designed to be sort of reusable, make repeated journeys. And yeah, they launch up like rockets, they land like planes. 135 space shuttle missions in total. And, you know, of all of those, apparently there were only 2, I don't want to say accidents, but you know what I mean when I say accident?
Yeah.
An accident where someone is at fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were only two situations like that. So, yeah, I mean, less than a 2%, you know, rate of failure there. That's not terribly bad.
Yeah, considering you've only been going to space for a bit, that's quite good.
Considering we only had, you know, powered flight for a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. It's mad.
It is impressive. It is genuinely impressive.
Can I just say, from the Wright brothers, like, inventing the plane to going to space, that's not enough time? We should have taken more time. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's weird to me. But
what's so amazing is that we didn't have to take more time. We did it successfully. Like, we went to the moon first time. Like, we succeeded on the
first time. I don't know how
that
happened, man.
It's amazing.
That's ridiculous. That is... How do you get to the moon and back and no one dies? Not at all.
Yeah.
Well done, NASA in, you know, was it 1960?
67.
Yeah. What? No.
1969.
Yeah, but it's absolutely madness. Just the pace with which we went from flight to the moon to now we have just reusable shuttles. There you go. And even now, we have billionaires going to space. Wonderful. Anyway, yeah, that's on the space shuttle. So the teacher, I kind of alluded to this earlier, but the reason that there was a teacher on board was to sort of give lessons from space, not because there was any need for lessons to be done from space, you know, but because, honestly, NASA was just not interesting anymore. They tried the diversity tactics. You know what the Marvel Cinematic Universe is doing, where now it's like the MCU, and now it's all people of color, and it's not my good old white boys anymore. That's what makes it bad, not studio interference or a lack of faith in creatives or an expedited schedule that everyone must stick to in order to keep this massive beast of a machine rolling and producing money for Disney. None of that. It's because it's got ladies and blacks in it.
So what you're saying is that you think that at some point in the future, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to do like an open casting call for a real normal person to be in Marvel, and then they're going to mess that up really horribly.
Imagine if
this happened. Imagine, like,
don't.
It's not out the route. Like, movies do open casting calls.
Yeah.
And they might cast someone. They think, oh, this is a lovely story.
Don't.
Free PR. And then something horrible happens.
Yeah, I can see that happening. Mm. I don't want it to happen. But yeah, no. To be clear, Luke, for you and anyone else who is watching or listening, the MCU, I'm in support of the MCU. I'm not in support of massive corporations destroying art. That's my main gripe.
The line you draw is somewhere in between those two things.
Yeah, somewhere. Really on the side. No, somewhere, yeah. But no, so the idea here is, yeah, they were losing ratings. Literally Deep Space Homer, season 5 of The Simpsons. They get Homer Simpson in a nationwide sort of search for, you know, a normal astronaut. In this case, they were looking specifically for teachers. PR. It was just... PR. And, you know, people had just stopped caring because space travel had gotten boring in the past. Like, what? Like 17? Is this 1987? So, like, 1986. So it's like 17 years since they'd gone to the moon.
17 years since you've gone to the moon and you're bored of it?
Yeah.
That's super weird.
Yeah, it's not right. But think about it, right? 17 years of, like, after smartphones, they're kind of boring.
Yeah,
it's like it's actually like 17 years after smartphones this year, right? Is it not 2007?
2007 is the launch of the iPhone, so
it's the first, like,
yeah, yeah, kind of,
yeah,
yeah.
17 years and iPhones are boring. This is literally Deep Space Homer, season 5 of The Simpsons. They want a normal person because the ratings are down. Because, you know, in this case, in the 17-ish years since they went to the moon, America got bored of space travel.
That's insane.
You can only go to the moon for the first time once, right? And they didn't make it to Mars. They didn't make it to any other planet or whatever. So, you know, once you've hit the moon, what do you do next, right? You put a teacher up in space and have them lecture there for a while.
Interestingly, this is actually like, this is classic storytelling. This is like stakes, right? So like going to the moon was interesting because it's like, oh, what if something happens? What if they don't get to the moon? And what will we find on the moon? Great. Mm. This is classic stakes, high stakes situation. Then we've already been to the moon a few times. I don't really know who all these astronauts are. I don't really care. They're fighter pilots anyway. If they die, that's fighter pilot life. Stakes are low now. We've already been. Then they're like, let's make stakes high. Put normal person on in space. Mm. What if normal person dies? Then sad. high stakes, but then normal person do die, so that is sad.
Yeah, it is. And also, what makes it worse is because it was shown in classrooms around the country.
Oh, that's so... That's
yeah?
Oh.
Yeah, children saw that. We'll get to that, actually, towards the end. But
put a delay on your video feed, please. For the love of God. 10-second delay.
Look, we'll get into it, right? We'll get into it. But yeah, so... The idea was to highlight the importance of teachers and to interest students in high-tech careers. Didn't go very well, did
it? No.
No. We really value teachers, so much so that we do this. We'll get into what this is. So what happened? Just like the play-by-play of what actually sort of happened there. So, you know, before we get into the sort of how and why, what happened is essentially when the shuttle was sort of on the launch pad, there were puffs of black smoke coming from the right solid rocket booster. So that's using solid-state fuel. Doesn't matter what that is. It's rocket science. It's not that complicated. hold on. It's rocket engineering, which is very complicated.
Yeah.
Rocket science, easy. Once the sort of shuttle took off, smoke went away. All good, right?
Mm.
Yeah, 66 seconds after the launch, where the smoke was now fire.
Oh, well, we want fire, no?
What?
Or not that kind of fire.
See, generally with fire coming from rockets, you want it pointing down, coming out of the end of the rocket. You don't want it, like, literally anywhere else.
Okay.
Yes, like that's because, you know, rockets are full of fuel and the fuel go boom.
Hmm.
Yeah, so mostly want fire, entirely want fire coming out of bottom, not anywhere else. And you know what they say? Where there's smoke, don't worry about it. It's probably fine. There's no issues.
Launch anyway.
Just let it go. Yeah?
Yeah. That's what they say. That's the saying.
It's a very long saying, but that's what it is. Where there's smoke, it's probably fine. Don't worry about it. Just...
Let's go.
Good saying. Do you want to say it again?
Yeah, yeah. Where there's smoke... I just say this to myself every time I start my car.
Yeah.
Where there's smoke, it's probably fine. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Let's go.
Yeah, that makes sense. Look, thank you very much for that. Essentially, that flame on the rocket grew. Can you have any guess as to why?
Oh, because there's loads of fuel.
Yeah, and fuel is
flammable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that fire basically kind of was shoved towards another fuel tank. Now, basically because the shuttle was going up, there was a sort of slipstream and the fire was just, the flames were just pushed in a sort of direction towards this big orange fuel tank. And so there was a leak in the booster. They knew that on the ground. And you couldn't shut down the solid rocket boosters. So it just kind of kept on going. No one could do anything about it, apparently. And then it burned through the shuttle's external tank. Then the liquid hydrogen tank burst open.
Hmm.
Can you tell me anything you know about hydrogen?
Oh, that's the thing that we do in science class where they fill a balloon full of hydrogen and they put a flame next to it and the balloon explodes.
Can you think of any other tragedy involving hydrogen and...
The Hindenburg?
Yeah.
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 That wasn't very nice.
No, what happened there?
Oh, it set on fire and exploded.
But why was that?
Because of the hydrogen.
Yeah, because they filled the balloon with hydrogen. And then lit it on fire. This is a similar situation, except instead of picturing a balloon, picture a rocket with 7 people aboard the shuttle.
Mm.
That's what happened there. So the fire sort of burnt through the sort of fuel tanks, and then basically like just before, I mean milliseconds, I've got on my notes here in front of me, milliseconds before that right booster crashed into the liquid oxygen tank. Now, Luke, what do you know about oxygen and fire?
Well, it needs oxygen, the fire. Mm-hmm. It likes oxygen, the fire. Makes it
That's
bigger.
True. Yeah, so if I was to say, I don't know, have a big old tank of oxygen and some fire,
would I'd you recommend say no thanks.
No?
No, thank you.
You put them together?
No.
What if I add in hydrogen? That surely must...
Oh.
That makes it fine, right? Yeah. No, so basically all the those liquids mixed together and exploded.
Hmm.
Destroying so much, like it just blew up, a big explosion. I mean, like hydrogen, oxygen, and the fire. It's catastrophically terrifying. Like, obviously, right? Like, those things needed to be within proximity of each other to launch the rocket.
Yeah.
And in no circumstances should they have met in the way that they did.
Mm.
But given that they did, it obviously caused a big... If you think about it, right, the energy that you need to sort of fire a rocket into, into space, right? A lot of that is kind of just going off at once. A rocket is, in effect, a controlled, directed explosion.
Yeah, you're sitting on a bomb.
Yeah.
And you just hope the bomb is going away from you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit more complex than that, because that's rocket engineering, but of course, rocket science is very simple. But yeah, it's essentially you're sitting on explosions being directed down to shove you up, to put it very, very simply. Now, NASA were sending instructions to the shuttle, sort of pilot, commander, or whatever, at the time, saying, what do you think they might have been saying?
Well, by the sounds of it, they were saying, it's all chill. Don't you worry. Nothing to worry about. This is fine. Just keep going.
Just keep going would not be incorrect, Luke. They were saying to boost the rockets from 64% power to 104%.
104%?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Overclock it or whatever. Don't worry about it, okay? These are just numbers I have in front. The numbers don't mean anything. The number's getting bigger. Okay. That's all we need to think about. But essentially, yeah, it was apparently it was reaching a period of maximum aerodynamic pressure. And so they were like, yep, fire, full blast as this explosion was happening sort of thing. Yeah. So there wasn't any sort of, oh, there's smoke. Oh, there's some fire. Let's try and be safe and think about it. Was just go for it. Just go for it. And some technical information here, what kind of happened. There was a pressure seal that failed in sort of one of the right solid rocket motors, and then that caused the explosion. Basically, we'll get into the specifics, but it had to do with the temperature being too cold. It was about 2 degrees on the day. And the way that the rockets work is that they're kind of like, and I'm going to read this verbatim, they were stacked like metal cans stuffed with highly explosive propellant. So literally just like kind of a series of little bombs on top of each other, if you want to think about it that way. And because they're things stacked on top of each other, if you can imagine, if you're like, you know, lifting off a rocket, there's going to be some stress, some shear forces on those, like making them move apart, right? If it was one solid thing, you'd have a lot of force on that. But like, you know, depending on whatever it is, it might be able to hold it if you've got strong enough material, blah, blah, blah. These things are stacked on top of each other means that there's connections, right? And there being connections means that there's, you know, kind of like more leeway for movement there. So what you need is essentially like a seal to stop anything from coming out from where things are connected, right?
Yeah.
If you, I mean... Do you need an analogy? Would you like an analogy?
I think what you're getting at is that if it was one thing, the amount of movement between the things is basically zero because it's one thing. But when it's separate things, those things can move around relative to each other, because in the same way that, like, if I have a long pole, that pole is going to stay a pole or it's going to snap. Whereas if I have a pile of tin can beans, those cans can all slide relative to each other because they are not literally attached to each other unless you have something external to the beans holding them in place.
Yeah, and if you imagine as well, let's say that there were these things were hollow. Instead of a pole and cans of beans, you've got like one big long hollow tube compared to, you know, several sort of like hollow cylinders stuck together.
Mm-hmm.
You need something to seal those cylinders because they're going to shift. So there needs to be a seal to stop anything from leaking out, you know, the highly flammable fuel that you're igniting, right?
Yeah.
And so this isn't me saying, by the way, that it should have been one big thing. That is not at all what I'm trying to suggest.
Yeah.
I'm not a rocket engineer. I only understand rocket science. I'm a layman, Luke, of course. rocket scientists are going to be so mad right now. but yeah, I'm not saying that it should have been one big piece. I'm just explaining that it wasn't one big piece. And because it's not one big piece, you need to seal between all of the individual pieces because they're going to move sort of not entirely independently, but they're going to shift under the stress of being sort of, you know, fired like a rocket. And so there's these things called O-rings that line those joints and stop any propellant from leaking out. So Do you know what an O-ring is? Do you know how it works?
I imagine it's a sort of little donut of material.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from my vague recollection of looking at this that this is supposed to expand at some point, and it did not expand in the way it was supposed to.
Yeah, so the way an O-ring works is essentially it's rubber, right? Or, you know, like let's just say a rubber-like material or rubber, right? And they're used in lots of different things, like scuba diving, for example, right? And it's sort of, when put under sort of stress, it will sort of bend and fill that space,
mm-hmm.
right? So when these different parts are moving around, instead of, you know, there being openings and gaps, that rubber O-ring, it's being put under stress, it's being squashed, it's going to fill the space and seal the gap.
Mm-hmm.
Works perfectly. As I said, it's used in scuba diving. It's like the kind of, called rebreathers or, like, you know, your scuba diving breathing stuff. There's an O-ring in there. Now, if you sort of cut or damage this O-ring, you've got a leak, mm-hmm. right? And stuff is going to fire out. Like if you were to do it with, say, scuba gear, your oxygen's going to be coming out of your tank because you've cut the seal, right? Now, what do you know about rubber and its sort of material properties?
Well, I'm going to cheat here because I don't know this about rubber.
Really? So you've not seen Fantastic Four from 2005?
I probably have seen.
You've not seen The Incredibles 2?
Yes, I have seen The Incredibles 2.
Have you not seen any film where a stretchy person is held captive?
Is that done in a cold environment?
Yes, Luke, it's done in a cold environment.
Okay,
why?
Well, extrapolating from that information from Incredibles 2,
Fantastic Four from 2005.
And I don't know if I've seen that, so I'll just extrapolate purely from Incredibles 2. I'm going to say that when it's colder, rubber is less rubbery. It's less sort of malleable and it's more rigid.
Yep.
And if left outside on a cold night, then it's going to get cold, and when it needs to expand, it's not going to do that.
If you're cold, they're cold. Bring your rockets inside. But yeah, no. yeah, literally, yeah. When rubber is cooled, it kind of loses its sort of elastic properties. It becomes stiffer, right? And as is probably obvious from what I've been describing, you want the O-rings to be, they need to be pliable. They need to be sort of bendy. They cannot be stiff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you think would happen, say, if you had a stiff O-ring?
For some reason, that sounds rude.
Sounds so naughty, doesn't it?
Sounds so naughty. If you had a stiff O-ring, which I don't, I guess in those circumstances, firstly, it's not going to expand to create a good seal. And then also it runs the risk that any tension or stress applied to it will cause it to snap as opposed to cause it to bend.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things are not very good when what you want is something that seals and something that is able to expand and contract.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, you're so spot on, right? Like when it is stiff and it can't bend, it can't fill the funny. It can't fill the space that it needs to create that seal. It's just that would then cause leakage, which is what we saw. Now, they obviously had tested this, right? You know, NASA's not just going to shoot stuff up into space without checking to see if it works. And their contractors aren't going to do that either. So, you know, what happened, as I said, it was 2 degrees on that night. And it was just too cold, right? It was left outside, obviously. It's a spaceship. Where are you going to put it?
Yeah.
Like, where are you going to put it?
Spaceship hangar?
Yeah, but as a hangar, like, climate controlled?
Maybe. Spaceship
heater? Probably now. Like,
yeah.
Probably now. they knew that the temperatures overnight were going to affect the O-rings, right? And there was enough evidence there to know that sort of effect on the O-rings could have an effect on the launch. In fact, almost certainly would have an effect on the launch because, you know, that was the coldest launch they'd ever had. The coldest launch they'd ever had. And there's this thing called blow-by. I think it's blow-by. I've only read it. I've never heard anyone say it. Could be blow-by.
Blow-by.
But I think it's blow-by. That's the kind of leakage. It's the kind of term that the engineers would use for that kind of leakage. You know, it wasn't just, oh, there could be evidence of this, you know, based on our project. They had evidence of it on an earlier shuttle flight, right? And in fact, in testing, I don't know if these numbers are exact, but if you sort of look at the tests, you can put them on a graph, right? And you could see that, you know, there's failures above 65 degrees Fahrenheit and failures below 65 degrees Fahrenheit, right? But the thing is that below 65 degrees Fahrenheit, there also aren't really any successes, apparently. Right. Right? And so you essentially had, and again, I don't know if these numbers are correct, like exact, but like, you know, grain of salt, and you know, take them and gives you an idea of what I'm talking about, right? Above sort of 65 Fahrenheit, it was sort of maybe like a 15% chance of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas below, it was about 100.
Whoa.
Right? So the idea being that like, the idea being that if you look at this, if you put this on a graph and you look at it incorrectly, you could easily look at it and be like, oh, well.
There's always failures.
There's failures.
Yeah.
But if you don't then sort of look at that graph and think, right, well, when are the successes? Oh, they're only above this line,
yeah.
Right? And think about the percentage of failure. Then that's where you have a problem, right? And this isn't a mistake that the engineers made, right? Like, the engineers knew the O-ring was sensitive to cold. They knew it was below its operating temperature. 11.5 degrees was its sort of operating temperature, apparently.
So 2 degrees is quite a lot lower than that.
That's smaller, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
It's smaller. And with temperature smaller means colder.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was colder than it should have been.
So this is Celsius, by the way, not... Is it Celsius?
I switched to Celsius.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
I should have said, yeah.
Yeah.
Look, how about this? I will specify when it's Fahrenheit.
Cool.
If I say degrees, I mean Celsius. Because, like, the rest of the world... I say the rest of the world. I mean the rest of the world, you know, including us, and not including the US.
Yep.
We use a normal system for temperature. But, yeah, no. Why do you think NASA launched? They, to be clear, they had all of the information that I have just given you. And also more, because they did not have some dumb mid to late 20s person
podcaster
reiterating. Don't call me that. Don't use that slur against me. You disgust me. Am I going to call you an influencer? Am I? No. No, I wouldn't do that to you. But they don't have some idiot in his like late 20s regurgitating stuff he'd read online. They have engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Rocket engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Not rocket scientists, Luke. Rocket engineers. The smart ones. Giving them all the information they need. So why did they launch? If you were NASA and you had decided to launch, why do you think you would have made that decision?
I'm guessing, let's say, they've spent a lot of money. And they're like, we spent too much money. We need to get on with this.
I mean, do you know what?
And TV ratings, maybe.
Okay, yeah, okay, there you go. So it wasn't, to my knowledge, really as much about the money. I mean, yes, it's always about money, right? It's always about money. If people die and someone knew that people were going to die and they didn't do anything to stop the people from dying, probably money or racism.
Or both.
Both.
Maybe both.
Lots of them, lots of time it's both. It's both, yeah. Sexism, too. Can't forget that.
Maybe all three.
Yeah, homophobia.
Oh, all four.
Yeah. Let's just say bigotry as an all-encompassing money or bigotry.
Okay.
lost my place. I'll find it again. But yeah, no. Essentially, it was ratings, right? Along with a bunch of other things. But ratings, public perception, that was a big part of it. So the thiokol engineers, basically, they were like, hey, we have all this data and we're responsible, decent human beings. Managers, you got to call up NASA and say, no, this is not happening. Right. So the engineers went to their bosses and were like, look, no, we cannot do this.
Yeah.
They're going to die. This is like a serious sort of safety issue. And the managers, what do you think the managers did?
So these are the managers at the private company.
Yeah, the contractor, yeah.
They said no.
Wrong, actually.
Okay,
no.
Good. I was going to say, because that wouldn't necessarily make sense, because these are the private company.
Yeah.
They don't care about the ratings, necessarily. So they call NASA and they say, hey, our smart dudes, they're saying maybe don't.
Yeah, a bit more, that they're saying, hey, our smart dudes are saying, don't you dare. Oh, please, God, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah.
And NASA were like,
nah.
Yeah, but like Reagan's breathing down our throat. So.
Ah, it's Reagan's fault.
A lot of things are Reagan's
fault. Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
War on drugs.
Oh, Watergate. Oh. Wait, was that the other one?
It's Nixon.
Oh, no. I got my bastards mixed up.
Look, don't worry. Honestly, here's the thing, right? If you're trying to find an evil president, it's hard to find one that isn't evil. You know, if I say, name an evil president, you're going to get confused because 50 odd names flying through your head. Name one non-evil president.
They've all done some evil stuff.
Name one non-evil president. Give it a go.
I feel like JFK was all right, but I don't know much about him. I feel like he was all right.
Man did get shot in the head pretty quick, so you know, like, he didn't have...
someone thought he wasn't all right, but maybe they weren't all right.
All I'm saying is he didn't have a huge chance to do much wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what JFK did, but probably horrible stuff.
I think there's
right?
some stuff at the time that people didn't like JFK for, but I don't think I don't think it's necessarily my aesthetics that I would be that bothered by.
Look, all I'm saying is that it's hard to be a president and not do a war crime or something evil.
Yeah.
Like, it's difficult, you know?
Yeah, think of the presidents, Corey.
Yeah, I get you, Obama. Don't worry. Like, look at Obama. Look about the stress. Look at the stress of bombing innocent children. Look what that did to him.
Yeah, he's got gray hair now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those children died, but, you know... he's got some grey hair, and that's really sad. Back to this, I think, Luke.
Yep.
This being this horrible story.
This other horrible thing caused caused in part by a president.
The Thiokol managers, they were like, okay, engineers, you know, we trust you because we're not complete asshats. And so they called up NASA and they said, hey, NASA, stop. And... as I was saying earlier, NASA had a very sort of packed schedule. You know what I mean? They had so many launches to do.
They got a lot on.
15. That's lots of That's like multiple a month. And they were like, look, lads, what do you want me to do? Push this back? I can't push this back. I got another launch. I got a launch here. I got a launch there.
But you just literally pushed one back. Your last one you'd pushed back.
I've got a quote here. So NASA's Lawrence Malloy reacted to the resistance this way. My God, Thiokol, when do you want me to launch? Next April? waiting to next April to save 7 lives?
What about this April? You could have just waited till this April.
You could have just waited till it was not cold. Go out with a hairdryer, warm them up or something. Like, man, like, do anything. Do something. No, don't do anything. Don't launch it. That would be the, yeah. So, basically... They wanted to show, hey, look, we're NASA and you can trust us. We have so many launches to do and we're going to get it done on time and safely. They did one of those things. So Reagan also wanted to do a State of the Union, State of the Union address that included, this Challenger launch. So not only were NASA like, we want people to trust us, we want good ratings, you know, we want to be valuable again. It was also, but Reagan, president, he wants to talk about it, so...
we've already written the speech.
Get it done.
We can't rewrite the speech.
Like, literally.
Yeah, yeah.
No, like, no, yeah.
No, I know.
Yeah, like, well, we've written the speech, so get it done. It's like, do you understand that this isn't rocket science, it's rocket engineering, okay? You can't just say, yeah, no rocket engineers. I've got a speech to give.
But you could have done a great, I mean, it wouldn't have been as popular, but with hindsight, it would have been good of like, I'm not afraid to take tough decisions and pause something when it's not safe. That's what a real president does.
Yeah. Let me just quickly, if I can quickly, you know, get into Reagan's mind. Oh, yeah. I hate the gays. Oh, wow. I don't want to be in there anymore. That was horrible. Let me just... pretend to get into his mind without actually doing it.
Okay.
What I would say if I were Reagan was, I hate the gays. Oh, God damn!
He keeps on coming through.
He keeps on doing it!
Reagan, go back to hell. Come
on. Oh, God. they don't want him back. He's going to be wandering around for a while. No, so if I were Reagan and I were to say anything other than homophobia, I would say in that scenario is, you know, look, as a president, I make tough decisions, as you said there, Luke. But, you know, and American lives are more important than anything. And, you know, you as the American people, you know, you deserve to be protected and served by your country. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's very easy. Like, 7 American lives. Americans are easy. Do you know what you do? Do you know what you do to get Americans on your side?
Yeah.
Say American lives. They love that. Say red, white, and blue. They go nuts. USA, USA. They're chanting it right now, Luke.
Somewhere.
They don't know. I mean, they heard me do that.
Oh.
Honestly, I promise you, there's going to be someone on the bus chanting USA, and the rest of the bus will join in.
Are
they won't even know why.
Are there a bunch of little Americans living in your head, Corey? Are there a bunch of little Americans living in your head?
God, no. I wouldn't let them in.
I think they might be, because I can't hear any chanting.
No, not Luke, you realize we're being listened to by
other people.
Oh, it's
you.
Yeah.
Whoa. Stop chanting. You've seen your country's done some naughty things. So's mine. I'm not chanting.
We don't love our country for all its flaws.
We are appropriately ashamed.
I don't know if there is an appropriate level of shame for our country.
Off the scale.
Hey, look, we ended slavery. We started it too, but we definitely didn't do it anymore after a certain point. Except for we still do slavery, just about
it. We do it secret.
Yeah, well, secret very much in the open. Just anyway, go watch the Prisons episode if you want to know more about that. Back to this. Ronald Reagan wanted to deliver a State of the Union address and talk about how cool the Challenger launch was. And so when Thiokol were like, hey, maybe you could postpone it, NASA were like, we'd love to, but no. And Reagan was like, I don't even know if I know about this. I'm Reagan. All I know is AIDS. Let it go. Go on. He let the AIDS crisis happen.
Oh, mm-hmm. What a good guy. Ironic / S, Corey. Don't give me that face. What do you? What in what world would I? No, stop! Stop it! Stop it!
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
I think it is, but it's rather quiet this time.
Well, Luke, we want to keep a big old secret about this Sci Guys merch.
Yes. Please do not tell anybody and do not purchase any of it. Otherwise, people will find out.
They might see you wearing our merch or displaying our merch and think, oh, wow, what a cool person. And I'll tell you this, as a cool person myself, having people think you're a cool person can be very, very stressful.
Yeah, we can't have that. And we also can't have you supporting the show to exist that you're enjoying right now.
Yeah, so absolutely under no circumstances should you go to normalcitizen.store and pick up some Sci Guys merch. Some Sci Guys merch like beanies and posters and t-shirts and calendars and cool stuff like that. Definitely don't go to that store and buy that.
Goodness me, that's an awful lot of stuff that I'm not going to purchase.
Absolutely, Luke. Now let's get back to the show before anyone listens to us.
God, I really hope we got away with that one. Now we're back from ad break. Do I get to defend myself?
No, but what I will do is tell you what happened after Thiokol pushed back against NASA and NASA said, we ain't budging because the president wants to talk about it and we want people to love us. The Thiokol managers then went back to their engineers and said, change your minds, guys. And the engineers were like, okay, cool. So you understand that we can't change our minds because this isn't an opinion. This is maths.
Yeah.
And rocket engineering. This isn't rocket science, guys. We can't just change our minds on a whim. This is real stuff. It's rocket engineering.
Oh, you're not gonna let us go, are you?
There's some rocket scientist
that's really
mad.
I really hope so. I hope Elon's watching.
he is not a rocket scientist. I mean,
but he
honestly
thinks he is.
Yeah, but look, here's the thing, right? Look, as you well know, I have a tier list of people, right?
Yeah.
There's rocket engineers.
Oh yeah.
Up there with brain surgeons. And podcasters,
yeah.
Not all podcasters, just two of them.
Yeah.
Me and...
Your reflection.
No!
James Harkin.
I was going to say Dave Warnicky, but sure. Me, Dave Warnicky, James Harkin, right? We're all up off screen, so high up, and along with the brain surgeons and the rocket engineers.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you've got, you go all the way down, all the way past teachers who are up high, all the way down to the lowest of the low, presidents. And below that, recruiters. Below that, letting agents. And we go way down into the dumps. And then it's the rest of the presidents. And then, like, right near the bottom, as you know, rocket scientists.
Uh-huh.
They don't know anything, Luke. They don't know nothing. They pretend they know something. You know what? The only thing worse than them, not the only thing, but one of the things worse than them, influencers, below that, of course.
Yep.
And then, like, all the way, like, yeah. I mean, so far down that, honestly, look, I think it's reaching another country. Like, it may be causing a hole through the earth, which, you know, into which all of the water is going to flood. There is Elon Musk.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He is lower than a rocket scientist to me.
Well, at least he can get back down there with his boring company.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
It's about boring, like drilling.
Yeah.
I thought it was just... I thought it was just a funny name.
Are you serious?
They made a flamethrower, Luke.
Well, yeah, but it is a big drill. I mean, in theory, at least.
A flamethrower is a big drill.
No. The Boring Company is a drill, and then they have flamethrower merch.
Okay, so here's the thing, Luke. I try to pay as little attention to Elon Musk as possible, and yeah. I am just now finding out that the Boring Company is a pun and not just... Why yeah. are they? Why do they? Why did they make a flamethrower?
Because they needed to fund their product, I assume.
But a flamethrower costs money to make and also can't be easily sold, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to introduce you to this crazy idea in capitalism called selling something for more than it costs. And that's how you get the profit that you spend on the Boring Company.
Have they considered, like, t-shirts?
Yeah, or just asking Elon Musk for some of his money. It was really confusing. I didn't understand why they were selling these flamethrowers. It was so weird.
Maybe there weren't any more emeralds left in that there mine.
They're making the Boring Company so they can bore even deeper to find more emeralds.
Some Dr. Robotnik type shit, man. Yeah, so back to the much more solemn story that we're doing. Yeah. But yeah, the Thiokol managers, as I said, they pushed back against NASA. NASA pushed back against them. And then they went back to the engineers and said, you changed your mind, right? The engineers were like, well, no, because as you can see, it is still below 2 degrees, and the O-rings are still going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, we have not changed our minds. We are potentially more worried that you're asking us to change our minds because it's making us feel as though NASA have not changed their minds, which is making us think people are going to die. And, you know, as the engineers that created this, we don't really want to kill people. So please don't have us be implicated in this. And the Thiokol managers were like, you know what, guys, don't you worry. So they went to NASA themselves and said, we're the managers and we think it's fine.
So why? Like, what? Why does NASA need Thiokol or whatever to change their minds?
Now, here's the thing. It would be really bad if NASA, you know, were told by the contractor that built their things,
yeah,
this thing is dangerous. So, for example, Luke, right? If I were to give you a pencil, and you were to be using that pencil in front of a lot of people, a pen perhaps to sign things at one of your many meet and greets.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now, if I were to tell you, hey, Luke, before you do your meet and greets, that pen that I gave you, liable to explode. Please don't use it.
But Daddy wants to do signings.
See, and that's exactly it. Now, if you were to go ahead and do those signings after I had said, don't do it.
Okay.
And people found out. Now, you'd be in a lot of trouble, right?
Yeah. So can you change your mind?
Well, okay. So I can't change my mind because, as I've said, the pen will explode.
Daddy got to do signings, though.
Okay. So I've spoken to my managers. Yeah. And my manager said that I have changed my mind.
Oh.
But I want to stress that I have not.
Okay. I'm going to go do my signings now.
Okay. See, and there you go. And the pen explodes.
Oh, no. Why did the managers not tell me this?
And it's not NASA's fault.
Woo!
So, yeah, basically NASA didn't need sort of approval from Thiokol, but it's more of a situation of like...
Yeah.
They do need approval from Thiokol in the sense that it is, you're like, you can't use a rocket booster that is built by a company when that company has said don't use it, there is an extreme fault, lives will be lost, right? Because then you are liable. So, you know, if you say run it again, let us know, right? Like, we want, because we need to launch this, so you need to be sure that we can't, right? That's essentially kind of what the conversation would boil down to. Although ultimately, the conversation is just, we are doing this. You need to make it okay for us to do this. And it genuinely got to the point where I think even the engineers called NASA. They were like, look, like, this is, you cannot do this. Like, they went above and beyond to really try and stop this. And it just didn't work. The managers went over their heads and, you know, the managers went over their heads because... NASA's a big moneymaker.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to piss off NASA, right? Because if you think of it from their point of view, right? Let's say there is only even there's a small chance, or there's a chance of something going wrong. There's a chance of it going right, and if it goes right, you're almost in a worse position than if it goes wrong, because you've said, or I say, if it goes right, right? If you postpone the launch, you look bad, right? you said there is a fault. Like, it's not, like, you can't do this thing. You, NASA, look bad. We're sorry. It's on us, Thiokol. That would mean that NASA's like, well, why would we renew our contract with Thiokol? Thiokol would stand to lose a lot of money there, right? And so from their perspective, it's almost as though, well, if there's a chance that it goes off without a hitch, then we're kind of in the clear. But if it goes wrong, then it's about as bad for us as if we just pull this, you know?
Yeah.
From the perspective of, like,
incentives matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But money is incentive enough. Money makes the world go round.
No.
But rocket scientists told me that.
Centrifugal force makes the world go round.
Rocket scientists told me that it's money. That's what they said. I don't know what to tell you, man. I don't trust a rocket scientist. Now, rocket engineers told me that money is the root of all evil. I don't know.
That would be me. I did that.
You're a rocket engineer?
No.
Wow. Never thought I'd have so much respect for you. But yeah, so as I've kind of already gone through, they launched it anyway.
Yeah.
And as the engineers predicted, it blew up. 7 people died, including the teacher that was on board. Barbara Morgan was the backup candidate for the Teacher in Space program. And she continued working with NASA Education, you know, after this. And she was the first teacher to travel into space aboard the space shuttle Endeavour in 2007.
She still went?
Yeah, in
wow.
2007. So okay. It was like, you know, 20 years
brave,
later.
Brave woman, though. Jeez.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those situations wherein, like, after this happens, you can't, like, not that it can happen again, but, like, they don't have the wiggle room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it happens another time, NASA are done for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's really kind of almost, it's almost a story of hubris. It's a tragedy, obviously. You know, it's higher-ups who, you know, understand the bigger bits of the project, but don't understand the really specific small parts and the dangers there, making decisions based on things that ultimately don't matter. You know, you wanted to have good PR, and in, you know, sort of in pursuit of that, you tanked your PR.
Yeah.
You absolutely destroyed it.
It is insane to think that, like, NASA is an organization that you would think is so clean, honest, at the very least, scientific.
Mm.
Like, if you're going to have a scandal come out about government department, you definitely don't think about, like, NASA.
Yeah.
Like, they just seem so on it and so pure. And,
well, because they usually would have to be,
and
right?
I'm sure they are significantly more now, having had this happen. But, you know, it just goes to show, like, even scientists are flawed. Like, you think that they're ruled by the science, but even then, the politics is what wins.
Well, that's the thing, because it's higher-ups as well.
Yeah.
It's the higher-ups that are making the decisions. So it's, I'm not saying that they're not scientists. I actually don't know specifically what they're sort of, if they would be described as scientists or not. I just didn't really look into that. But what I do know is that they have management roles, right? It's running the institution, the organization, right? It's people who are in PR. It's all of that, all of these people making the decisions, and the engineers, the ones who do know this stuff, are being sidelined by, you know, by their managers after the fact as well. And yeah, it's truly, genuinely just a horrible, horrible story. But luckily, these engineers, they went to NPR. I think I mentioned this earlier. They went to NPR. Or NPR found them. There's actually some great articles linked in the description to read about this. They're fantastic reads. But there was some real proper journalism there. They remained, they were sort of whistleblowers. They were anonymous whistleblowers, and they remained anonymous for, like, decades. Mm. And yeah, I mean, like, they just came out and they said, here's what's happened. We knew this was going to happen. We tried to stop it. You know, like, we called up and everything. And it didn't work. And as well, one of the reasons that was given for not stopping it was, well, we've already sort of figured it out so that this can be broadcast to X number of schools in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And in the aftermath of that, there is a study that is looking at the effect of the Challenger explosion on children at the time. Now, essentially, the results of this are that, like, I think broadly, if you look at it, it's almost like PTSD
yeah.
in these kids.
Yeah.
It's like experiencing one big traumatic event. So more than 60% of the subjects feared at least one stimulus related to Challenger within the first 5 to 7 weeks of the explosion. The East Coast and latency age groups appeared significantly more symptomatic than did West Coast and adolescent groups. Over the 14-month study period, most symptoms dramatically faded. However, adolescents' diminished expectations for the future in general increased, and latency age children's changed approach to space centers, space careers held relatively steady. Three East Coast latency age children met the DSM-3, that's how old this is, the DSM-3R symptoms requirement for PTSD in 1986. No children met these in 1987. But yeah, basically, it's the result of this for a period was similar to PTSD
yeah.
in these kids, which like, yeah, do you know what I mean? It's, I don't want to say it's like 9/11, but it's a similar
trauma event. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a similar idea in which it's so televised. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's,
and it's been so bigged up in the run up to it as well about how exciting and amazing this is going to be.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden, just. It just goes wrong. And the fact that it was known about, it could have been avoided, yeah. and it wasn't.
The one, okay, this is not a good thing, but it's the one thing that's sort of, it helped me anyway when I remembered watching this documentary about this disaster was there was some calculation on whether the inhabitants would have experienced any pain or even fear.
Yeah.
And as far as I can remember, they wouldn't have even known it was happening.
Yeah.
They would have just died immediately and would never have known, would not have felt anything, wouldn't even know it was coming. So that, you know, it's horrible, but you've got to find the sort of silver lining where you can. And, you know, you'd hate to think that someone's last seconds were just feeling fear and betrayal. Mm. And yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's about as positive a note that we can end on.
Yeah.
I suppose there's just one thing left to do, Luke. It's the Quitfire Quiz.
Dun, 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 da! Challenger Disaster Edition.
I'm so pleased at that.
I'm just pleased it's over.
Yeah, fair. Well, the rules for the Quitfire Quiz are the same as always. Luke will ask one question. That's one question between you and the audience. So the first person to answer that question after finish asking it wins. What do they win, Luke?
You win a responsible government that cares more about its people than TV ratings and speeches.
I don't think that actually exists. Can you give away non-existent gifts, Luke?
I can in my mind.
Well, the question for you is... what failed in the Challenger explosion?
A ring.
Yes, I also would have accepted bureaucracy.
The system.
Reagan, American government.
Yeah.
NASA.
Our hopes and dreams.
Oh yeah, lots of answers to that one. I hope you got at least one of them, but that's all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons, with an extra special thank you to executive producer Glitch Rabbit, and thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too! Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotGory everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Goodbye, and listen to Rocket Engineers.
What he said.
But not Rocket Scientists.
Those guys are idiots.